Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter. Hey Watchers, it's Nyan, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. On this week's feedback segment, Scott and I give Dan our feedback on the show Hellstrom, which is currently available on Hulu. As usual, the feedback segment does get a bit spoilery, so please be warned if you're trying to avoid spoilers for Hellstrom. Later in the episode, friend of the show Dave comes on to pitch the show Dead Like Me, which is available to stream for free on the Freevee service, which used to be known as IMDb TV, and that can be accessed through Prime Video. Dave recommends we check out episodes 1 and 2 of season 1 of the show. As always, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and feel free to hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook pages. Also, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, or just something random you want us to mention on air, please feel free to leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. One final bit of news on the pod. This week's feedback segment is Scott's last appearance on the podcast. He is moving on to other personal projects, and we wish him the best of luck in all future endeavors. All right, Watchers, let's get into it.
All right, it's Dan, and we're back to get some feedback on Hellstrom TV series from Marvel Television that originally aired back in 2020. And I want to ask Scott and Ian, so what'd you think?
I was digging it. I only got two episodes in, but I was appreciating the vibe and the tone. It was a nice, for me, it was like a nice return to stuff that I kind of enjoyed a long time ago. Like I was really into Stephen King growing up. And I mean, not to say this is directly a Stephen King has a feel to it, an exact feel to it, but it was in that same general genre of stuff that I had dug before. So I was here for it, man. I enjoyed it.
So you could say Tom Austin was a Tommy knocker.
Yes. Oh man. How many Stephen King puns are we going to get, be able to get in here? There's so many. It's a huge universe.
What, suffice to say, we'll be in misery by the end.
Oh, we're going to get all the needful things in here.
Who is Tom Austin?
He plays Damon.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, I thought all of them just had a devil of a time getting rid of all those demons.
You know it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I really could see how it was setting up the larger story, even with the two episodes that we saw. We can talk about the full two episodes, right? Because this is the feedback segment.
Yeah. We can go ahead and go a little spoilery.
Okay. Yeah. Midway through the second episode, I thought to myself, you know what? I bet their dad isn't dead. It just seems like something these types of shows or these types of stories tend to do a lot. And that turned out to be the case.
Yeah. Pretty wild. And I think a lot of the series, like I mentioned during the pitch, it does get a little bit more even crazy in a lot of different ways. So it's pretty wild.
I don't know what's a worse parent, because in the very first episode, they say the internet is a shitty parent. And I was like, oh, wait, is Father Hellstrom worse? So it's just, I'm hoping that the show goes in the direction of him competing with the internet, but I don't think that's where it goes. Either way, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like you wouldn't think you would find a worse parent than the internet, but perhaps that in this case, that we found one, or they found one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked how Anna was dressing like Steve Jobs for some reason.
I thought she was super hot. Like I was, that haircut. And like, yeah, I was like, I'm into it. I think it's that specific haircut. I'm like, wow, I want to definitely go on at least one date with you. And I hope you don't kill me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I always imagine what I would call her style is Bjork chic.
Oh, there you go.
All right. That could work.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because she's got a little bit of like this, you know, weirdness behind her, but there's also a little bit of kind of this chic kind of, again, she deals with, you know, arts and antiquity, so to speak. So she's got a little bit of that almost modern curator feel to her in some ways. So yeah,
definitely. And overall, like in terms of the aesthetic of the show and the way they engage tropes, I thought they did a really good job. I'm kind of surprised it's only got one season. I mean, maybe it's because of what happens in the later episodes, but the score, I note they're doing a great job with the music. It was evocative of sort of classic horror, but not too derivative. It felt appropriate. And I like the fact that in episode two, there was a point where there's a jump scare. And then the character says, it's effective. Because I'm like, yeah, jump scares are cheap, but they're effective. Yeah. I hate them personally, but the fact that they called out the trope and were like, it works. and we're kind of saying like, we know it's cheap, but it works. I thought it was cool. I appreciated the way they approached this. I wasn't necessarily completely sold on this being in love with it, even though like it did kind of harken back to at least what I remember of Hellstrom, like, which was really limited growing up and reading those comics. But I guess I was a little surprised. It seemed like it wasn't maybe, it didn't follow the comic storylines that I remember from as a kid, but I guess it sounds like this, I'm sure this character has grown over time, but it seems like they've got some good folks involved on the production side as far as comics go. Cause I see Blair Butler, who was I believe was really into comics, and she was a producer on Attack of the Show on G4. If everyone remembers that.
Oh wow. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I mean, so I didn't mention specifically what the people had issues with, cause I know that I mentioned that it had a series of negative reviews after it dropped in 2020. Although obviously, you know, October 2020 wasn't exactly, you know, the most healthy time for most people and their viewing habits, if you will. But you know, the most of the negative reviews came from the fact that they weren't feeling the characters and the plot were very interesting. And I think that, you know, the way I said it kind of in the pitch was that, you know, many of the MCU fans out there, they want less talky talky and more punchy punchy. And so that's, I feel like they're, because this is a little bit, like you said, a little bit more horror-esque. I don't know if people were fully ready. If they wanted the full blown, if it says Marvel on it, I want it to be superheroes doing super things kind of thing. And this is very much, like I said, it's grounded in some ways, but it's delving into the supernatural element. I think that maybe people, you know, earlier on in the pandemic might not have been fully ready for something kind of as dark as this.
Yeah, that is very possible that it was just the timing of it, of the, a show with this tone, kind of these types of stories. Yeah, maybe just people weren't into that at that particular time.
And then secondarily, on a business perspective, just, you know, to give some more context to this here, you know, earlier, you know, before 2020, there was a lot of, you know, announcements and talk about shuttering Marvel television and bringing it all under the Marvel Studios banner eventually, so that Kevin Feige could take control as, you know, the chief content officer, if you will, across the board. So that's also, I think, part of it is that it didn't have a good reception, you know, within the 2 months that it kind of had been out in the ether on one hand, but also B, you know, I think they were really looking to tie in a larger kind of, you know, thread of things, of all things Marvel moving forward. I mean, even as of the day we're recording this at CinemaCon, Kevin Feige, after his appearance, he went ahead and mentioned that, you'll have to excuse me, I have to go back to our first in-person content workshop for Marvel Studios, where we'll be laying out the next 10 years worth of content.
10 years.
So this is the kind of roadmap that they're going with now. I feel like that it's not explicitly said, but they're blaming it on the fact that no one liked it, quote unquote. But I think that there was a lot more going on here than meets the eye between the pandemic and between they wanted to probably throw more of their energies into the Disney Plus series that were being planned and or going to be theoretically filming at that point. Plus, obviously the collaboration on No Way Home.
And it does seem like Marvel is leaning more towards movies now as opposed to TV shows. So, yes. I mean, I suppose with things like Moon Knight, they're still doing some TV shows, but it seemed like maybe this was kind of towards the end of that period where there was just a bunch of Marvel TV shows.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement. I think that the idea is that the movies are going to be this crazy, out there, spectacular, reaching for that end, you know, the Infinity War, maybe an Endgame kind of level of, you know, adrenaline, if you will. And that the TV series, while important and they tie into everything on the larger perspective, they tend to be more ancillary or kind of more reference material to the larger scheme of things. So we can tell origin stories at a slower pace and not have to rush through it in a movie. And the movies really delve into the kind of the more crazier plot points that exist out there. So, you know, we can talk about, you know, things like Secret War and stuff like that.
Huh. When I think of WandaVision, I don't see it as ancillary. It seems like it's something that's driving even, you know, into the movies. So,
well, again, some people said that it's ancillary. I mean, personally, I think that it, you know, as I say, it's all connected.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
like 90s.
Yeah, but you know, but I think people are gonna might perceive it like that. That they're the big ticket items are going to be in the theater, and that the smaller screen is going to show important things, just not in the same kind of level, if you will.
Yeah, I can see that definitely, and maybe they're not even pulling in like. In terms of, well, I guess Moon Knight is an exception, and certainly Falcon Winter Soldier and WandaVision, all that stuff. But if you're looking at things like Hellstrom, Cloak and Dagger, I'm thinking
the Runaways, yeah,
like that stuff, you're getting sort of lower level celebrities. Because I was looking at the actors in the year, and they're good. I mean, you've got Elizabeth Marvel, who always just shows up in random stuff and does a decent job. I like what she's doing as the mother. I liked her in Homeland as the president. I liked her. I recently saw The Dropout on Hulu. Mm. She was great as, I always call her Elizabeth Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes' mom. She did a really good job in that. So that was cool. And then seeing Bunny from The Wire, whose name I don't remember right now. But all I know is the minute I saw him, I took a beer and put it in a paper bag. And I was like, welcome to Amsterdam. This is great. He's doing a good job.
That's Robert Wisdom.
There you go. Thank you.
Always good to see people from The Wire in other things.
I agree. Yeah. Agreed. There you go.
Yeah. Also, I was thinking about this show in comparison to American Horror Story 1984, which we recently saw. And so even though I guess American Horror Story is more almost like a kind of like a parody of horror, of the horror genre in some ways. And Hellstrom may not have been a horror show overall, but I really enjoyed Hellstrom more than AHS, I have to say. I think it worked in those like horror elements in a way that just appealed to me more.
It was more structured like the CW shows you're into, right? It's got like...
There you go.
All the Arrowverse stuff.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, Nye.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I think that definitely has more of that kind of feel. And I think that, you know, I do agree with, you know, a lot of the commentary that exists out there that, you know, and I think I'm sure you guys would agree that the visual effects are still, you know, pretty good for, you know, TV.
Oh yeah. I'm not super picky when it comes to effects. So maybe I'm not the best person to judge, but I thought they did a good job with it, honestly.
Yes, I agree.
There was nothing where I was like, oh, this is super cheesy and dumb.
Yeah, the effects looked pretty strong. Like looked like they fit into the story really well and didn't stand out as being cheap or out of place.
I think this is one that I'm probably going to continue on with. I want to see how it ends, and I think it's helpful that, and I mean, sad for the show, but it's helpful for me in that it's only one season, at least at this point. Unless they ever consider a revival, because then I'm not overwhelmed with something like Better Call Saul, which I saw a couple episodes of, and now they're on season six, and I'm like, I'm never going to watch this thing, man.
Man. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure right at least for the moment, basically, it's going to remain in the can as it is. But again, with Kevin Feige, you never know. I mean, you know, Hellstrom, I believe, was part of the one bunch of the Midnight Suns, I believe. So it's not impossible. They could bring him back as, you know, an ancillary member of the team at some point in the future, if they do decide to go that route with all the other people they're introducing here. You know, I there's a lot of people out there that are all postulating, you know, who's going to be the member. Well, clearly, you know, we've got, you know, Blade obviously is coming, Mahershala Ali, and we've obviously got, you know, a bunch of other members that are coming in, Black Knight, and possibly Moon Knight if he decides to extend his stay into the MCU, and amongst if they do bring back a new or an existing Ghost Rider. You know, there's a lot of possibilities all across the board here.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about Ghost Rider generally because I started reading some stuff that had him in it and realized I never think about it, but there is that Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie. And I have no idea how that works in relation to the MCU at all. And I don't want Nicolas Cage to play a Ghost Rider going forward. So yeah. I'm hoping if anything, if they use the current Ghost Rider, which is Robbie Reyes, which will also be just more interesting in general.
Well, and the Robbie Reyes from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, and Scott, did you watched up through that arc, right, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes, I did. Yes, he was very good at it.
Yeah, I thought that Robbie Reyes was amazing. I really enjoyed his interpretation.
Yeah.
That's on me. I did not watch. I only watched like a little bit of the beginning, first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I just never got back to it, but I didn't realize he was in that.
It was much in one of the much later seasons. I want to say like season 5 or 6, I want to say.
Oh, fair enough.
But yeah, I thought his interpretation was great. I would love to see him him being brought into the MCU as the Ghost Rider of this moment or whatever the case is. Although there were always rumors. There's about, you know, as we record this, we're less than a week away. This almost that from the release of Doctor Strange 2, the Multiverse of Madness, and there were rumors that none of the Norman Reedus would play a version of Johnny Blaze. So you never know. Again, it's all rumors at this point. But I think we're probably going to see less cameos than people think out there. But you know, again, like I said before, it's all connected.
Yeah. And apologies, I think we might have discussed that Robbie Reyes was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. previously. I think when you were pitching this, so that's my bad for the brain fart, but very good call, guys.
No, yeah, but I think it's a good reminder out there, you know, since we're talking about all things supernatural.
Bird up.
Yeah, but I'm glad you guys, you know, had at least, you know, a good time with the two episodes you watched it. And you know, this is just a reminder for me that I have to get off my Laurie Bass and watch the MODOK series on Hulu, because I've yet to do that.
You haven't seen MODOK yet?
Nope.
Oh my God.
Go figure. I watched all of Runaways. I watched all of Cloak and Dagger, but I have not watched MODOK yet. Yeah.
Yourself for not watching it sooner.
I'm slipping. I also have a Hitmonkey up there as well. I have to watch that as well.
Oh, I started that and couldn't get into it. It might be more up your alley than mine, but for some reason it wasn't drawing me in, but I don't think it relates. I mean, I'd be fascinated to see how it relates to other stuff. But man, MODOK, I'll just never forget the random line, thick thighs save lives. That's all I have to say about MODOK. It's amazing. It's so good. Nice. But it'll never be canon, but it is so good.
Yeah. There is still that rumor out there that the MCU MODOK was going to be played by Jim Carrey. But then he announced that he was kind of going into semi-retirement. So that's probably not going to happen at this point. So,
oh, that would have been amazing. Okay. I'd rather have Patton Oswalt, but Jim Carrey would have been great.
Yeah. Well, Patton Oswalt, I mean, his voice, like, again, is to me just made sense. Like, when I saw like the previews for the MODOK series when it dropped, like, it just made sense to me in my head. You know, and the irony is, like, you know, he's like other people before him, you know, Chris Evans having played, you know, Johnny Storm before playing Captain America and whatnot. So, because he was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. before he became MODOK.
Interesting.
Yes. I was just going to point that out. So, yeah, he was definitely already in the MCU in a completely separate show. And I guess he just wanted to stick around and get some more work from that. So,
hey, you know, if Marvel's foot in the bill, man, you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he was a producer on MODOK. Like, I think he was really, really pushing the project. And I realize this isn't a pitch for MODOK, but I'll make it a mild pitch for MODOK because it's got such good actors. Like, it's got Melissa Romero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Ben Schwartz is in it. TV's Nathan Fillion, I think, plays Iron Man, if I remember correctly.
Nice. That's perfect.
There's some really good voice talent in MODOK, and it's absolutely brilliant. So please stop doing whatever you're doing, and please go watch MODOK.
On Hulu. There you go. Yeah, it was sponsored by Hulu. Not really, but you know.
Thank you for recommending this for us. I was into it. It was a good choice.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's what we thought.
All right, watchers, welcome back to another guest pitch here on Watch OK Please podcast. This is Dan, and I'm here to introduce our good buddy Dave. We've known him for quite a long time, and think, you know, he's a very big fan of a lot of things that we're into. I know that we had an awesome experience doing some Star Trek stuff back in the day over here in New York City. So I had a really awesome time. That was one of my favorite memories from, you know, pre-pandemic, that, mind you. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to hearing what pitch he has to have for us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I have Dead Like Me, which you can watch, I believe, on Amazon Prime. Mm. I love Dead Like Me. This is one of my favorite shows. This is a Brian Fuller show. And Brian Fuller, if you're unfamiliar, cut his teeth on 90s Star Trek. I believe his first writing credits ever were Deep Space Nine. And then he went over to Voyager for a number of episodes. But then he started developing his own shows, which I just think are phenomenal. Everyone is super creative and interesting. Like, he first came to my attention with a little known show called Wonder Falls that was canceled by Fox after three episodes. Wow. So you know it's good because it was canceled by Fox.
Yeah. Yeah, Wonder Falls and obviously Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies is actually, I think, my favorite of Brian Fuller's shows. But Dead Like Me is a close second. And of course, then he went on to do Hannibal and developed a bit of the new Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of a theme in Brian Fuller's works. He seems to be a little obsessed with death.
Yeah, I never thought of that before, but yeah.
And Dead Like Me really puts it right up front. Like, it's right there in the title. And this is most similar, I think, to Pushing Daisies, which, if you're familiar with it, is also about death. But Pushing Daisies is the more technicolor fairy tale variety. This is a little more grounded, or as grounded as you can be with supernatural elements. And so Dead Like Me is about a group of psychopomps, which is one of my favorite words from the Greek, which are essentially caretakers of the dead. I just like saying the word psychopomp.
It is a great, I think that's got to be in the show title now.
Yeah. It's a lesser known word, though. So Brian Fuller calls them Grim Reapers, which is a little more common or more well known in pop culture. I personally don't like the word Grim Reaper because I feel that's a singular, unique personification of death. And while the show calls them Grim Reapers, in reality, they are actually psychopomps, even though the show never uses that word.
Got it.
I think some people might say that, you know, Grim Reaper is kind of this, you know, more modern or older to modern concept where people have this, you know, this is a scary thing that death is. And so people sometimes develop an unnatural fear of death, possibly because of the way Grim Reaper and the word and the term and the symbolism is used in it, possibly. I wonder. So,
right. And that's the purpose of the psychopomp, both in Greek mythology and in the show Dead Like Me. People are afraid of death, especially immediately after they died. Yep. So the psychopomps provide this community service as to, like, hey, it's going to be all right. We're just here to guide you to your afterlife. It's no big deal. Just calm down. I know it's super scary right now because you're no longer alive, but that's why we're here.
So like a death Sherpa.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good explanation. I like that. Death Sherpa. Yeah. Helping climb the mountain towards the afterlife.
Oh, that's kind of a cool concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, the concept actually, I think Brian Fuller read a Piers Anthony book from the 80s called On a Pale Horse, which is about this guy who meets the Grim Reaper, and then the Grim Reaper gives him his job. And so Brian Fuller was kind of inspired by that, and so instead of just a single Grim Reaper, what if there is just a whole society of Grim Reapers that actually lived with us in our normal society? We just don't recognize them as such.
I mean, operationally speaking, it makes a lot of sense to have more than one when you deal with the tolls or death, especially with the larger population. The percentage just gets higher, obviously. So,
oh yeah, otherwise you get backed up with dead people. Like, things afterlife would never process. It just, things would just take forever.
And yeah, can you imagine the waiting room and like a Beetlejuice? Sheesh.
Yeah, there's a shocking amount of bureaucracy in Dead Like Me, with, you know, just the Grim Reapers to like trying to process, like, yeah, their reports and paperwork that they have to do. And yeah, there's just a stunning amount of bureaucracy.
Starting to feel like Death meets Office Space a little bit with TPS reports, or am I?
So yes, in fact, there's an Office Space component.
Nice.
Where one of the Grim Reaper that we are primarily attached to is this girl named George, who is works at a temp agency.
That's amazing.
And because like Grim Reapers need a day job just like everyone else, right? How are they going to pay their bills?
Yep.
And so she works at the Happy Time temp agency and does a lot of filing and works with spreadsheets and binders and lots of paperwork.
I can see an entire episode being about stealing office supplies.
You can't take that stapler with you when you're gone, though.
It's true. It's a really good point.
Well, the other thing is, I hope you watch the first two episodes. The first episode is a little long. That's about an hour and 15 minutes. And the second episode is a normal episode length, about 40 minutes. So it actually comes out to a little under 2 hours.
Perfect.
First two episodes. So you will definitely see Happy Time temp agency in the first two episodes. But there's a future episode where they actually do get into the bureaucracy of it all, where the Death Incorporated, for lack of a better term, I just called it that. They don't call it that. Is a little antiquated. So they just fill in everything. They've done this for centuries, you know, just filing forms. And so at one point, George, who works in this temp agency, is like, hey, we can update this. I can cross-reference things. Like, let me introduce you to Excel.
Yep. Oh, I mean, this is where I would normally insert, you know, a digital transformation pitch as well. But yeah, I'll refrain this time.
I thought you were at least going to bring up pivot tables.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, pivoting in the grave. The basic pitch. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah.
So, kind of being a fan of Fuller's work, and generally, what sort of draws you into this particular series? Like, why pick this one to pitch over something like Pushing Daisies, for example?
I probably would have picked Pushing Daisies, but I was under the impression that you might have already seen that.
I've seen the whole series.
Oh, well, fair enough.
That's why I chose this over Pushing Daisies. Otherwise, I actually think Pushing Daisies is slightly better.
Fair enough. I actually, Kristen Chenoweth is in that, right?
Yes, she is.
Yes.
Okay, so we dodged a bullet because I'm like the one person on the planet who does not like Kristen Chenoweth. So this worked out really well for me.
Yeah, Kristen Chenoweth is not in this at all. Yes. But Mandy Patinkin is a lead.
Oh, what? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Mandy. The best thing I've ever seen Mandy Patinkin do is delete all the emails in his inbox. This might be the, will this be the second? Will be beat Homeland? I'm very curious. I didn't know he was in this. That's awesome.
Well, I loved seeing those candid movie clips off Twitter. It was him and his wife and his son. They were trying to explain some sort of a modern concept of something. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but those were priceless.
Well, yeah, he's a bloody delight. So, what is his role in this universe?
He is the foreman of the Grim Reapers.
Oh, perfect.
I think that works.
Yeah. So he's a very paternal figure, because all Grim Reapers actually have had a life on Earth before they have become this new job. And so he actually lived, he's over 100 years old.
Wow.
But you know, doesn't look a day over, you know, Mandy Patinkin's age.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that actually answers my question. I was going to ask you, like, how do they arrive into that role? But obviously they've had a life after a certain point, and they kind of transition into this. Got it.
Yeah. I mean,
Mandy Patinkin spent a lot of time telling people that they'd killed his father, and that they should prepare to die. So this tracks.
This makes perfect.
This is like the exact evolution from The Princess Bride. I love it.
Well, Mandy Patinkin's character is actually a bit of an interesting mystery in the first season. He's doesn't talk about his past, and we don't really get to explore what his history is until the second season.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so how many seasons were there?
It was two seasons, followed up by a TV movie made about 5 years later, which was kind of terrible, so we don't talk about that.
Fair enough. Gotcha. Yeah. I'm guessing that the same kind of balance of drama and comedy, you know, draped against these kind of situations is kind of going to be par for the course as it relates to some of the other series, like Pushing Daisies, I'm assuming.
Yes, very much so. This is the perfect dramedy. Lots of comedy, but also drama. I mean, people die in every single episode. So sometimes they die very comedically. Sometimes it really pulls on your heartstrings.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Kind of like in real life.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
For every Darwin Award winner, you know, there's, you know, the loved ones we actually lose. So,
yeah.
So there wasn't anything specific around death itself that sort of drew you to the series, because I can see Mandy Patinkin and you know, Fuller and then Mandy Patinkin combined. That's a pretty big draw for a lot of people. But is there anything else you think that might pull in sort of someone who wasn't familiar with this at all?
I mean, Brian Fuller, like, I think he's just worth watching by itself. For me personally, like, this is a very personal thing. The series aired at the same time my own father was diagnosed with cancer and died.
Oh, wow.
So death was very much on my mind. And so when I was first watching it, this is back in 2004, 2005, it helped me process things a little bit better. But it's actually a very, like, it's interesting. Pushing Daisies is a very bright series aesthetically, but like very dark thematically. And this is sort of the inverse, where on the surface, it's a very dark series, but you realize at the end of the day, it's actually a much happier series than even Pushing Daisies is.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting, yeah.
Well, I can see something that's constantly dealing with that being a great way to kind of process those emotions.
Yeah.
As I haven't had anyone pass away from cancer in my life personally, but I did work with on a floor in a hospital with leukemia patients. So I got to watch a lot of people, unfortunately, pass away. So I can, it's different, but I can understand.
Yeah.
So I could see that being helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm definitely, again, because of the Fuller Patinkin maneuver here, I think that it's definitely going to be, you know, a fun watch. I'm definitely expecting it to be. So then we'll just have to find out, you know, if, you know, we're going to push on through and continue on with those two seasons, and then and of course, woefully neglect the movie.
Yes, ignore the movie, and yeah, this second season mostly wraps things up. There are a couple like, I feel they were headed in a couple directions of like, oh, I really wish they could have continued this thread. But I find the first two seasons rather satisfying. I wish there were more, but, you know, that's the way of these things.
Yeah, I find that these types of series, I think that they really kind of come into their own usually about, you know, a couple episodes in the first season. And then, you know, they really has good pacing and generally are timed so that if the third season was the final season, it would basically be a great kind of all encompassing story. And I think that's what really kind of sucks sometimes when you have a story or you have compelling characters in said story and you want to, you know, see everything kind of get, you know, wrapped up in a nice pretty bow. And, you know, unfortunately, that third season would have been like it. It would have clinched it, you know. And then there's some stuff out there that, you know, goes on for, you know, forever or and it still doesn't do much of anything. So I really hope we can get more series like that vein where there's actually a complete story and it's not like we just want to keep things going to make more money.
Yeah. I feel like I'm seeing a trend more towards that nowadays, which is good. Yeah. But it should be the rule as opposed to the exception.
Agreed.
So thanks, Dave. This sounds, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah,
this sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys like what I like, and I love this. So I think you'll like it too.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward when you've seen the first two episodes. We'll do a much deeper dive. But I'm just excited just even to pitch it, you know?
Yeah. No, we definitely hear that, you know, and I think that a lot of good things going for it for sure.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.